Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rex Road. Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. We'll have Corey Curtis from News 2 coming up at 8 o'clock. We'll get his thoughts on the Titans and their preseason finale against Arizona. Who's going to make the 53-man roster as this week goes on? Looking forward to that conversation with Corey coming up at 8 o'clock. But right now, we get to the thrashing that the Vanderbilt Commodores laid at the hands of the Hawaii Rainbow Warriors over the weekend. 63-10, Joe Rex wrote the final score. Vanderbilt puts up over 400 yards of rushing on the ground. Mike Wright with 146 yards passing, 163 yards rushing. Ray Davis ran for 87 yards. Rocco Griffin ran for 63 yards. Chase Gillespie ran for 63 yards. I mean, they were running left and right all over Hawaii, and it was an interesting game from the standpoint of Hawaii comes out. They basically march right down the field against Vanderbilt. They take the lead. The first couple of possessions offensively for Vanderbilt were not pretty. There was some penalty trouble that they ran into. And then all of a sudden, it's 7-7, and Vanderbilt scoops and scores. Anthony Orji runs one back for a touchdown to make it 14-7. And, Joe, really from that point on, it was total domination by Vanderbilt in that game. Pretty loud statement for Clark Lee and company in week one, I guess technically week zero, but week one of their new season.
No, it really was. It was it was impressive. Whatever you think of Hawaii, and they're not good, but look, Vanderbilt last year doesn't do that to, I don't know that they outscore air. Like if they're playing team, you know, like they're doing 7-on-7 drills for 3 hours, I don't know that they score 63 points. Okay. And, so I think there are some really positive things to take out of this. One, I mean, this kind of confirms to me a little bit of like Clark Lee. And we talked about this. I wrote about this at the Athletic, the film session of the spring. You know, you all these things with coaches and film and internal stuff, you're always like, okay, but what does that really mean in a football game? But, you know, I saw it. It was pretty incredible to see like how much progress they had made just in the exact same practices one spring to the next. And a lot of that is, you know, that first spring, there's a lot of guys who weren't around anymore who were just like, yeah, they're not bought into the new program, you know? And the guys who have stayed around, like they've gotten a lot better. They've gotten better individually and collectively. And there's a different energy. You just go back to last year's opener. Yeah, ugly. Like, ugly. 23-3 to East Tennessee State. They did get better through the year, for sure. But this is a different deal. This is now an offense. And I do think picking a quarterback was the right way to go. And building an offense around that quarterback was the right way to go. And I really like a lot of what I saw from Joey Lynch's offense Saturday night. A lot of different, just a lot of variation in how they're trying to run the ball. You know, we still got to find out with Mike Wright against better teams, you know, being able to place throws and all that stuff. But I thought it was pretty good overall from him. And then that defense, you adjust. You didn't know what they were going to do offensively exactly. They came right down the field on you, and it looked like, oh, boy, you know, this is going to have to be a shootout if you're going to win. Well, they didn't score another touchdown the rest of the game. Great adjustment. And I just think they got some good players in the back seven. Max Worship was great. You mentioned Orji. Guys flying around. I think at linebacker and DB, they are better this year. And they need to get healthier up front. Even the freshman, Darren Agua, couple plays, you could see the pass rush ability from him. So there's a lot to like right now.
There's a lot to like. You know, Mike Wright in that game running the ball did whatever he wanted to do. There was actually a couple times in the first half, Joe, where I thought they probably should have utilized him a little bit more in the running game. I mean, he was getting 10, 12, 15 yards a pop in the first half. And they threw like a fade route on third and three one time and threw one down the field on fourth down too when it was like fourth and two. And I was like, yeah, just run the ball with Mike Wright. He's getting 10 yards a pop out there. It also to me though brings up an interesting question, not necessarily in the next game, but as you move into SEC play, like how much do you want him running the ball? Because he was such a weapon out there, 13 carries, 163 yards, two touchdowns, but also like you don't want him getting hit left and right either. So I do wonder, you know, you want him to be himself and be a playmaker and all that stuff, But in a perfect world, if you're Clark Lee and Vanderbilt moving forward, how much do you want Mike Wright a part of the running game? That's going to be interesting to see, because I think for the offense to reach its full potential, he's going to have to be a big part of the running game.
I agree. It's a great question. And I mean, I'm sure Clark Lee wouldn't say this. He sure wouldn't say this to his team. But deep in the back of my mind, I might be looking at, okay, which games can we win if I'm Vanderbilt's coach? And I'm looking at like Missouri and South Carolina, maybe Ole Miss and some of those games. It's like, gotta let it all hang out, man. Like,
yeah,
you know, he has got to be a huge part of this. He's got to be ready to slide when he needs to slide. But that threat has to be there. You've got to utilize. He's an incredible weapon when he gets the ball in the open field. And then you get into like the Georgias and Bamas, and, you know, maybe you think about protecting him a little bit more, because like it's just not realistic that you're going to do anything in those games anyway. So don't let those guys take free shots at him. You know, I mean, he grew up with Will Anderson, good friends with him, but you don't want Will Anderson getting a clean shot at Mike Wright.
You ever. Do not.
You know, so that's almost how I would look at it. Which games are winnable? But you know, look, the way that team looked the other night, and I don't know how bad Hawaii is. I bet you they're going to be pretty bad this year. They're bad last year. That's why we talked about this all week. Vanderbilt should run wild on them, and they did. They're not going to have that kind of advantage often. They should do the same thing to Elon Saturday night in their home opener. But based on what I saw, I think they got a chance to go 4-0 in the non-league. Now, that's a big, big ask if Sam Hartman is quarterbacking Wake Forest, and we don't know the situation there. We don't know if he will or not. And that's a very good offense, probably even without Sam Hartman. But I think Vanderbilt has a chance to be 4-0 going to the SEC, and that would be a pretty big deal if they could do that. So I think it's absolutely full on Mike Wright running the ball, everything that you can do creatively with that offense that you can do to try to get these wins.
Well, I don't know how their offensive line is going to hold up as they move forward into, you know, stiffer competition. It was a good start, obviously, for that offensive line. One thing that I do feel good about, in addition to Mike Wright and his ability to run the ball, I think they got some players in Ray Davis and Rocco Griffin, Chase Gillespie. Like they've got some guys that can run the ball. And again, it's going to require your offensive line to give you some lanes to do that as they get into SEC play. But, I mean, look, Davis runs that ball hard, man. I really like watching Davis run the ball. There was one run the other night where Rocco Griffin looked like Derrick Henry Jr. out there too.
No, they were both impressive. You know, Patrick Smith didn't play, and Clark Lee didn't really specify why, but he was arguably number two after Davis. So he's right there with Rocco Griffin. But I agree, Rocco Griffin, the physicality of his running style was impressive. And Ray Davis is going to be a weapon this year. He's going to have bigger games than that. And I think he's going to have bigger games catching the ball too. So, what can they do? I think there are some SEC defenses on their schedule that they are going to run the ball on, and there are some that they will not.
Yeah.
It's just – but there's going to – I think more games than not this year on the Vanderbilt schedule are going to be worth watching, and that alone is a massive jump from last year when very few of them were.
Well, there's no question about that. Look, I mean, I think it's very easy to overreact the first game of the college football season, and people do it all the time. I do it all the time. It happens. But I will say, like, if you're a Vanderbilt fan, enjoy this. Like, it's been rough the last couple of years. You don't walk through the door and beat someone 63-10 very often in the history of your football program as a whole. So, like, I think if you're a Vanderbilt fan today, I realize it's Hawaii, and, you know, after watching them play the other night, I think Hawaii might be, like, exceptionally bad. Like, I think they may be really, really bad. But who cares if you're a Vanderbilt fan? Like, I think you should savor what you saw this weekend and enjoy it, because, look, I don't know how many Saturdays like that you're going to get again moving forward, but that's one to me, if I'm a Vanderbilt fan, I'm enjoying every last second of that one over the weekend.
It's been a long time since Vanderbilt put something like that on someone, and this is, you know, this is an FBS team program. Good timing in terms of you go out there, because it is a lot of teams have struggled out there. But I feel like the week out there was smart for Vanderbilt to get accustomed to it. And they're bad. The program in transition, bad football team. But I agree. I wouldn't dwell too much on how bad they are. There's plenty of bad teams that you didn't beat or certainly didn't just destroy over the years. So I think there's a lot of promise in that performance. And there's some players on this team who I think some veterans who've gotten better. And I think that there's just this collective, and this is what Clark Lea has been trying so hard to build. They've got like a good, you know, culture. Let me just use that word.
Oh, yeah.
Good culture. And look, I think it shows up when you get ripped through on the first drive of the game. You got false starts and stuff in your offensive line. It looks real bad, and you just hang in there. Okay. Stay the course, and then all of a sudden you flip the game. And that's a good comment on what they got going with their intangibles.
615-737-1025. Vandy fans, we want to hear from you. What did you make of the season opening thrashing by Vanderbilt against Hawaii? 63-10, the final score over the weekend. 615-737-1025. We'll continue that discussion next. FanDuel wants you to be ready for game day when college football kicks off in week one. This week, right now, new customers can get $150 in free bets guaranteed for week one. Just place a $5 bet and you can get $150 in free bets, win or lose. Tennessee, a 33.5-point favorite right now against Ball State. I still like the Vols to cover right now, but go ahead and get in on that before that line moves even more. But that's the way that I'm looking right now. You take it any way you want to take it. If you've been thinking about joining FanDuel, now's the perfect time to give it a shot. The app is easy to use. They're always hooking you up with great odds. And when you win, you'll get paid quickly as well. So see for yourself why FanDuel is America's number one sportsbook. Download the FanDuel Sportsbook app today. Sign up with promo code ROB and place a $5 bet to get $150 in free bets guaranteed to kick off the college football season. Once again, that promo code is Rob. Must be 21 or older and present in Tennessee. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable free bets that expires 14 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Got a gambling problem? Call Tennessee Redline at 1-800-889-9789.
Well, yeah, he did a lot. You know, Mike was able to show the things that make him a unique competitor and a unique player. He obviously had a ton of success on the ground. He was also able to find some plays through the air. I think most important is he led the offense. He was out there and I thought was an emotional connector and, handled our double calls, handled our checks effectively. And there's going to be a lot to clean up. You know, I mean, it was not a perfect performance, but there's a lot there for us to build on and a lot of positives around, what he was able to accomplish on an individual level. But, at the same time, yeah, I'm looking at the offensive line. I'm looking at Will Shepard throw a block that sprung the run there, the long run for the touchdown. Gavin Schoenwald showed up a ton. He was back there with three backs that ran the ball effectively. Ray and Chase and Rocco did a great job. And so, Mike benefited from all that. And then, we know that he has the ability, when the play is there to make it, and he did that tonight. We'll clean up the things that we need him to improve upon. And again, this is just the start for him, but a good start it was.
That was Vanderbilt head coach Clark Lea after a season opening 63-10 win for Vanderbilt against Hawaii over the weekend. Hard to draw up a better start for Vanderbilt than we saw on Saturday, 63-10, the final score. So what does it mean for Vanderbilt as they move forward here? We're taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. David in Arkansas on the text line says, so much for, and I paraphrase, quote, Vanderbilt doesn't know what they're walking into when they come to Hawaii, end quote. That one did not age well.
Yeah, there were some comments after the game from some of the Vanderbilt players about that too. Apparently, Clark Lee played that many times for his team. So, you know, coaches, they're going to use this stuff, man. They can downplay it. They're not usually they're going to leave that for their team, right? To get all mad about or whatever. Yeah. But they're going to use it, and so apparently he used that quite often. And was it Max Worships? I think it was Worships said they were hoping they could score 70 on Hawaii. So, my gosh, have a little mercy on people, Vanderbilt football. Jeez.
Well, hey, man, I'll say this. That first drive where Hawaii just marched right down the field, it was a raucous crowd out there, man. I mean, it was like a good high school football game. There were people excited in the stands out there.
I will say it looked like a really – I mean, obviously a very small venue, but it looked like a fun crowd.
It did.
You know, they were rocking, man. And then, boy, about midway – well, I mean, even at halftime, I guess it was still – I mean, it was only 21-10. But you got to about, like, 5 minutes into the third quarter, and it was like, and it just starts emptying out. Like, the beach is right over there.
It looks really nice out there right now. Looks like a great day in Honolulu. Go find you something else to do if you're out there in that crowd and you're a Hawaii fan. So, good luck to Timmy Chang and company. Totally.
Yeah, it's a big job. It's a big job. But you know what? Big job for Clark Lee at Vanderbilt. And a lot of lumps last year. And yeah, like I don't look at this and think all of a sudden Vanderbilt 7-5. But they're going to be a lot more fun to watch and interesting to watch this year.
Will from Nashville on the text line says, I agree. I don't want to overreact to Vanderbilt's win. Hawaii might be the worst team in FBS. In fact, they probably are. But 63 is the highest point total since 1969. I feel better about three wins for the year. And who knows, maybe sneak in an SEC win or two. That offense, if Wright stays healthy, will move the ball on below-average SEC teams. It's coming from Will from Nashville. Look, I'll say this, Joe. I predicted them to go 4-8, and I tweeted about it on Friday, and I had some people on Twitter that thought I was nuts, and particularly some Tennessee fans that thought I was nuts about Vanderbilt going 4-8. And I'm like, well, first off, it's not like I'm predicting them to go 7-5 or anything right here. Like, 4-8, still not a great year. But it's good. It's improvement for right. Clark Lee in the second year. I'll just say I feel better about it after this weekend. I do.
Well, no, I agree. I mean, I went 3-9. I mean, I picked them to lose both of these, you know, tougher non-league games coming up. You know, home against Wake Forest and then at Northern Illinois. And I'm questioning that. I think I may have shot a little low. I will say that also anybody who jumped on over 2.5, You might feel okay right
Feeling
now.
All right.
You might feel okay. You get number two's coming Saturday, I think. Although I know Vanderbilt fans right now are like, shut up.
Oh yeah.
Nothing is guaranteed. I mean, last year, what were they gonna do? Name their score against ETSU, right? And they lose 23-3. But I don't care. They'll be 2-0 after they beat Elon Saturday night at home. And
Joe's already looking at Bama for Vanderbilt.
Nah.
So that'll be 4-0 heading in there.
Joe, are you?
Then it's Bama time, baby. Come on.
Joe was the one who voted for them to win the national championship.
First place vote. Yeah. There was a first place vote for Vanderbilt. Maybe somebody knew something we didn't, Joe.
Thankfully, I did not attend SEC Media Day, so I cannot be accused of that. You could, though,
yeah,
Michelle. You and Caroline actually attended that, so you are potential voters. We still need to figure out.
You all know I picked Kentucky.
Just saying.
Actually, I forgot.
They're in first place right now. That's all I'm saying. I know that they have not played in an SEC game and nobody else in the league has played, but they're in first right now.
All alone in first.
That's right.
So, no, hey, look. There's some good. I think they had some young guys. It's not like it was like freshmen or young guys all over there, but like Jaden McGowan, you saw him a little bit the other night.
He's quick.
And, he's going to be a weapon. And defensively, I just think some of those guys have just gotten a lot better too. So maybe they had to. Clark Lee had to scramble when Jesse Minter left for Michigan, and he went with a young guy, Nick Howell, at D coordinator, who of course had been at Virginia for a long time, Bronco Mendenhall. But I was very impressed with just the overall play of that defense. And maybe he found a gem here in Nick Howell.
We got a texter that sent in a screenshot of a $500 bet that they placed on Vanderbilt over 2.5. for the payout of over $1,000.
Oh.
Hey.
Oh, my, my.
Got to be feeling pretty good about it.
Listen, you want to share it with us?
Got to be feeling pretty good about it right now.
I think you're going to be happy.
Maddie,
you're going to be happy.
Maddie on the text line says, they're right. We didn't know what we were walking into. We haven't won a game like that since my great-granddad cranked his car to get to work. It's from Maddie on the text line. I'm telling you, I said this last segment, and I'll repeat it now. Vanderbilt fans, I think, should really enjoy this. I know it was Hawaii, and look, I think as has been pointed out multiple times on the text line, I think Hawaii has a chance to be just straight dog water this year, just awful. But if you're a Vanderbilt fan, who cares? Yes. Like, I think you should savor every last minute of that you just saw this weekend.
Cheeks teams galore over the years have beaten or certainly hung with Vanderbilt when Vanderbilt was supposed to win big. So, look, last year, one thing I heard from a Vanderbilt alum friend of mine is, I want to see them look well coached. Like, you understand the talent deficiency and everything. You want to see them look well coached. Again, I think that we saw progress during the season that you have to point to that. But they looked like a well-coached team Saturday night.
Yeah.
Like, they just, again, you had some early issues. You have to adjust defensively after the first drive. You got some mistakes operationally on offense. Overall, though, looked like, like the offense was creative and had a good plan. And then the defense did what they've talked about all offseason, which is swarming to the ball and just some things about defense that you have to have to have any success. The hustle and just playing fast, knowing what you're supposed to do. So they look like a well-coached team, and I think that's encouraging. It's going to be really interesting, these especially these two games, the Wake Forest and the Northern Illinois game. I think those are going to be good games, and if you can win those games, wow. I mean, Clark Lee could be the toast of college football by late September.
JC in Goodlettsville on the text line says, it's safe to say Vanderbilt has the best running quarterback in the SEC. That's a strong statement. Are we willing to go there with Mike Wright, the best running quarterback in the SEC?
You know what's interesting is, I think you can make that case. The top two might be Mike Wright and Hendon Hooker.
Yeah.
Hendon Hooker doesn't run a ton, but he is tough to bring down and really good runner. Again, it's like there's going to be way more Vanderbilt running Mike Wright than Tennessee running Hendon Hooker, but that might be your top two. Bryce Young is okay.
Yeah, but he's usually got 9 seconds to throw the ball, so he normally doesn't have to run very much.
He just hangs back there and throws at first rounders. Who else would be in the discussion on that? Like, there aren't a ton.
KJ Jefferson, he can run pretty well, but.
Yeah, but I don't think. Yeah, no. I think that maybe. I think you may be right, and that's the thing. So, and again, that's not a huge surprise. I mean, Mike Wright, we've seen it. The guy can take it to the house.
Yeah,
you give him a seam. It's so then how much can the passing game? Because there are going to be games ahead, certainly, where like you got to do more in the passing game, and you're not going to just dominate a team like this.
Coming up next. No, go ahead, Joe. Finish this up.
I was just going to say. So I thought there was some good passes. Some good moments there, but that's definitely going to have to progress for some of those bigger games.
Coming up next, we'll continue the conversation on college football. Tennessee in action this week, and they got some good news over the weekend as well. We'll get to that next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by the Law Offices of Amanda Gentry. We are live from the Hillside Medical Game Studio on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee, discussing some college football and taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. It is game week for the Tennessee Vols as well. They take on Ball State coming up on Thursday night at Neyland Stadium. And, Joe, some good news for Tennessee over the weekend as well. We've talked a lot about the Brew McCoy situation and his eligibility from coming from USC. He was granted immediate eligibility over the weekend. So Brew McCoy will be available for Tennessee to play in this game against Ball State. I don't know that it makes a huge difference for that game. You're hoping for Tennessee, if you're a Tennessee fan, that it doesn't make a big difference in the Ball State game. But as they move forward here, beginning the next week against Pittsburgh, it's good to have Brew McCoy available for this team. They need all hands on deck in that game. So some good news on the Tennessee front over the weekend.
Yeah, didn't have to get to, you know, I mean, you wondered if at some point Heupel would start upticking his messaging, you know, in terms of frustration on the whole thing. But it ends up being fine, and he's been practicing. So it's not like he's been all of a sudden now he's going to get reps with the ones. He's been getting them, and so he'll be able to play in this game. I think you'll notice him. I think, you know, Cedric Tillman is a very physical guy and certainly the Vols' best receiver. But Brew McCoy he's huge, and I think he's going to be a big part of this offense, and it's just a big deal for them to get everybody together Thursday, get as much ironed out as they can before a huge game in week two.
Yeah, and this game is interesting to me from the standpoint of, you know, even last year in their season opener, they looked good. They won the game, but the offense kind of took a little bit to get going last year. Like, I'm interested to see if from the jump this year, with as many, you know, returning players that they have, especially at quarterback and with Cedric Tillman at wide receiver and in the running game, like, from the start this year, can Tennessee's offense be clicking on all cylinders? Like, that's to me, as I look at this game, I said it earlier, the line is 33.5 right now. So, you know, I'm interested to see where that goes by kickoff coming up on Thursday. But can Tennessee's offense from the jump be ready to go? And then defensively, you know, who's starting at corner? What does your depth look like? You know, can you generate a pass rush against a team like Ball State? Because, like, if they get through that game and they're not generating a pass rush against them, that's going to make you feel pretty concerned moving forward when you start to play some better teams and better offensive linemen as well. So there's a couple of different points of intrigue for Tennessee in this game coming up on Thursday.
Yeah, I would think that the offense in this game would look a lot better than it did a year ago in the opener. You had Joe Milton, and that offense came right out. I want to say they scored TDs in the first two drives,
yeah,
but or maybe just the first one. But there was a long lull in the middle of that game. I think they lost. Did they lose Cooper Mays? They lost one of the Mays brothers too, and that clearly hurt them. But it was kind of a mucky performance, you know, and then they eventually just kind of ran it and ran away. But I would think the passing game would be a lot sharper here. They should be ready to roll. Offensive line for the most part, you know, a lot of experience, you know, new left tackle, but Jabari Small, I mean, Tillman and the tight ends, you know, we don't talk about them, but I like their tight end situation. So I'll be surprised if they don't come right out with that offense clicking. Yeah, defensively, you're looking at some of those guys up front. You're looking for domination. You're looking to see if even some of the depth guys can get in there and even how some of the defensive backs compare against each other, because I think we're going to see a fair amount of play.
What do you think Princeton Fant brings to the table this year in the passing game? He's a guy, he's been there forever. There's a lot of chatter over him, you know, about him over the weekend in terms of expectations for him heading into this year. You know, he had 16 catches last year for 220 yards and a touchdown. The year before that had 12 for 103. So he's not been a big volume guy in the passing game for Tennessee in the past. But, you know, body type wise, I mean, he's 6'2". 235. He's been a guy that's obviously involved in the running game, but, you know, in the passing game, I am interested to see, you know, what sort of a weapons the tight ends can be in Heupel's offense. They really weren't much of a factor last year, and I'm interested to see how different that looks, if at all, this year.
Yeah, it's a good question, and he Heupel has had, you know, past teams offenses, you know, with tight ends producing more. So I think Fant absolutely has a chance to have a good year, and maybe it's a little bit of one of those things that you don't talk about a lot, but could be an underrated part of this offense for sure. I mean, he's a talented guy. We know that, you know, we know what the Fant name means when it comes to tight ends in the NFL, and he you know, this to him, he's going to know what he hopes is a huge season, and get himself into that league.
Yeah, and you know, you're hoping if things go well on Thursday, if you're Tennessee, that maybe you could get some different guys in. Maybe a Joe Milton signing on Thursday. We'll have to wait and see what happens on that front if Tennessee's offense can handle it. But I think I'm more intrigued by the defense on Thursday than I am the offense. Like, I think the offense is going to be good. I don't know how good it's going to be this year, but you got to feel good about Hooker at quarterback. I think Jabari Small is a really good player at the running back position. I like some of what I've heard about the depth at running back that's coming out of there in Knoxville this year too. So the offense I feel good about. The defense to me is still the part of this team for Tennessee where I have no clue what we're going to see. And I don't know if we're going to find out all that much against Ball State, but I am interested to see that side of the ball. You know, can Tim Banks in year two, is there more depth there? Can you generate more of a pass rush? How does the secondary hold up with guys like Alante Taylor and Theo Jackson gone at this point? Like, there's a lot on that side of the ball that if you're a Tennessee fan looking at this team, that's still the one area of the team that I think has you nervous and maybe scratching your head a little bit heading into this year.
Yeah, and I think Pittsburgh is good enough. Even with their losses, they still have some very good receivers. We'll see if Slovis, you know, how good he is, but he was at USC and certainly was a huge recruit. And they've got, I mean, they have an all around good enough offense to, you know, put a lot of points on a decent team. So we're going to find out real quickly how Tennessee matches up there. And, you know that there's tougher defense or offenses ahead on the schedule. But you know, Thursday night's a big night, I think, to get some of those guys figured out and try to get a little momentum and confidence.
Yeah, and it's going to be one of those things, too, where, you know, what does the crowd look like? There's a lot of excitement heading into this year. You know, the fan base is fired up, ready to go heading into this year with Josh Heupel and company entering their second year. A little Thursday night under the lights at Neyland Stadium. I'm interested to see what that looks like. But, like, if you're Tennessee, you know, this is a game where – you need to get ready and you know, get clicking early because all of a sudden it ramps up. Like, I think a lot of people, and I've even probably been guilty of this myself, have looked at the Pittsburgh game the next week for Tennessee and have said, you know, well, Pittsburgh doesn't have Kenny Pickett anymore. That's a W for Tennessee. And all of a sudden you look around and Pittsburgh's in the top 25, and I saw Desmond Howard over the weekend. He had Pittsburgh in his college football playoff the end of the season. So I was like, oh, okay. Well, this Pittsburgh game is, I don't know if I'm going college football playoff with Narduzzi and the Pitt Panthers this year, but this is going to be a pretty big challenge for them early on. So I don't want to call a Ball State game a dress rehearsal for Tennessee, because if you're a Tennessee fan and you watch the Georgia State debacle take place, I think that's going to stick with you for a while. But in a way, it kind of is a dress rehearsal. Like, you need to get firing and ready to go for the Pitt game.
Yeah, that was an interesting I know he had Michigan, too, which of course he did. Although, hey, at least Michigan actually made it last year, so it doesn't sound totally ridiculous now. But, yeah, that was a – huh? I thought he had – didn't he have one more of his teams? It was also like a head-scratcher, wasn't it?
I had to go back and look. I couldn't get over Pitt. I got frozen there.
Well, you know, they look, they also have – I mean, Kalijah Kancey for Pitt up front, it's a guy who I think you're going to hear about it on Sundays, and Narduzzi always has really good talent and scheme on defense. So, no, that's – I look at that game, I think it's going to be like last year's game. I think it's going to be really close to come down to the end, and it's a swing game in this schedule. And a lot to say with how good this season can be.
So, yes, here was Desmond Howard's four-team college football playoff bracket that he had. Texas A&M, Baylor, Pittsburgh, and Michigan. So, A&M – Baylor, Pittsburgh, and Michigan. He had A&M winning the national title game against Michigan. But no Alabama, no Georgia, no Ohio State, A&M, Pittsburgh, Baylor, and Michigan for Desmond Howard. Beautiful stuff.
Well, you know what? If you're gonna go, alternative on the thing, I mean, just go all the way, man. Just go all the way. I mean, everybody else out there is going to Ohio State, Bama, Georgia, and whoever. So, I like the willingness to go out on a ledge there.
I mean, it's kind of a bold prediction to not pick one of those three to be in the college football playoff, but to have all three of them out, I respect it. Look, maybe he's a big believer in Jimbo Fisher, as we know, Texas A&M, great academic institution. And maybe this is the year that the Jimbo puts it all together on the football field.
Yeah, it's about darn time, I tell you what.
We'll see what happens. Tennessee in action coming up on Thursday. Coming up next, it is time for the Rex Rant with Joe Rexrow. We'll take your thoughts as always as well on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. 615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, the game.
The time is now for the Rex Rant.
Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
On Robbie and Rex Road, here on ESPN, 102.5 The Game, and the Game Nashville app.
Gonna get to you, girl. Step by step.
And it is that time of the day, time for the Rex Rant here on Robbie and Rex Road. Joe Rex Road's Rant of the Day. You can check it out every morning at 7:45 here on the program. Joe Rex Road, fresh off a trip to Michigan, dropping his son off at college over the weekend. It's back today and ready for the Rex Rant. Joe Rex Road, I turn things over to you.
Yeah, so I have a lot of different rants that I could probably do around that. I'll keep it confined to Facebook, which, and I don't actively do Facebook. Katie started a Facebook account for me early on in the early days of Facebook. I caught up with like some high school friends I hadn't talked to in a long time, and that was cool. And then for the most part, I just don't participate in Facebook. But I hear about things that are on Facebook from Katie, who is on Facebook, and I think maybe the soft now. The hot take, you know, like the Preds Facebook, you know, it's a special land of hot takiness.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm sure there are other, team Facebook pages that are like that. But maybe the softest group that I've encountered on Facebook is the Michigan State Parents group, incoming freshmen. I mean, like the complaints on this thing, it got to the point where actually it was kind of entertaining on the drive home from Michigan yesterday. Katie just reading some of these things, like why, you know, my freshman is dropped off and there's no entertainment and they're just sitting alone in their room. Like what kind of situation is this? Or, you know, there's a long line to get into the dorm. You know, this is unacceptable. I mean, you know, like 7,000 kids moved in on Friday alone, you know, just these constant like complaints about these little things that aren't exactly right for you. And I just wonder, like, is it just Facebook specific? Like, if you get on that particular website, like you're an especially complaining, bitchy, soft person. You know, or is that, I mean, maybe it's just that this, you know, maybe it's Michigan State. I don't know. Maybe it's parents of college kids, but it was an incredible, I should have gathered a bunch to, cause there was some that like had me howling out loud. Like really, you thought that this is what the college should do for you?
Pretty, okay. I can't amazing. Get over like the entertainment. Like Did these people think that there should be like a marching band for their children getting out of the car or something? Like, what? There was no entertainment.
There should be like, you know, activities in the dorms for them and stuff. And it's like you're moving into like where they're going to live.
Yeah.
Like, and then you can go talk to people if you like, or, you know, you could go like buy books,
Walk
where your classes are. I mean, what, like, yeah, you go eat food if you want. It's like, I mean, this is not daycare. You're not dropping your children off at daycare. They are now college kids. Insane, man. But I will say that our veteranness of the whole place, it was so this Facebook page was also what Katie was watching as we were driving in to move in, and it was just complete panic because it was like there's construction on the main road there, and it's like people are like hours behind their move-in time. They're in gridlock traffic for hours. It's like just pure awfulness. So I can understand some complaining about that, you know. But for us, of course, we knew all the back roads through the farmlands. So like we took farmland back roads and got right to the front door of the dorm with no waiting at all. So it was like, see, there's a benefit to actually knowing the place that we're taking our kids. So we were cackling even more at the Facebook group about that. But all in all, it was that made it kind of funny. All in all, very emotional and, you know, mixed feelings kind of weekend.
Yeah. I going back to like the Facebook part of this, I don't think it's like Facebook specific. Here's basically the takeaway that I've had as I've reflected on what social media has done to our society. I think there's a lot of good things that have happened out there. Obviously, the ability to connect with people that you haven't seen in a long time, and there are many ways that social media can be a very good thing. But I think mainly what it's done, Joe, is we used to just not know how stupid or complaining people were, and now we know. It's right out there in the open for everybody to see. Like, it really is. Like, even people my age, I'm about to be 30 next month. Like, I'm kind of that last generation of, all right, I know what life was like before social media, and I know what life is like in the middle of it right now. And even me, like, you used to just not really know what people thought about every last issue out there because it just didn't come up in casual conversation. And I guess in some ways it's cool to know where people stand and hear people's opinions on things. But for stuff like that of, like, complaining on Facebook pages or, you know, I'm not a part of this, but I've heard it's just awful. Like, if you're in, like, an HOA and your community Facebook page is online, like, apparently that's just an awful place. Like, you used to just not know what people were mad about, which was a much simpler time in our society.
No, you're right. Yeah. I mean, the complaint box is now open for all of us to be forced to read.
Correct.
And yes, the good call on the HOA. Oh, boy. Got some doozies on that front, too, over the years. I guess you're right. I guess it's more like a reflection of people just had to, like, complain to themselves. But, I mean, it's just, I don't know, man. Just
write a letter to the
entitlement.
Editor.
You're right. Yeah. Like, you had to actually go through the effort of doing that. And now it's right there for you. You can complain to the world. This kind of gets into even, and I've been guilty of this, because sometimes I think when it's ridiculous, I rationalize it by saying, well, I don't want this to happen to other people. So I will say, oh, thanks for losing my bags at Delta. But that gets a little bit much too. And this also gets into in interpersonal. So, for example, and this pisses me off, and we've talked about this, and I didn't really see it, but our Jack's roommate's parents witnessed someone being really crappy to one of the volunteers. It's the screaming at people who are not at all responsible for something bad happening, but are the ones who are forced to communicate about it. It's so disappointing and annoying. Like, go to the source. If you know someone who's at fault, go to the source. And sometimes you may be upset at a Delta representative. That's who you're talking to. But even that person, like, they're just fielding these calls.
Yeah.
You know, like, express what happened. But, like, screaming at that person is making it like that person's responsible. And that's just not fair at all. Think about doing that all day. well, also, taking these complaints.
Also, sometimes, you know, things just happen. Like, not everything's going to go perfectly for you in your life. Like, you have to be able
to
adjust and overcome your circumstances at times. I know that's a crazy thought in today's world, but that does have to happen from time to time.
Yeah. So, you know, if you got kind of a mess, you have thousands of kids moving in, and, you know, you can't get in at your exact time, you got to wait a little longer. The poor volunteer out there, so basically it was students, or then there were some older people out there volunteering. Like, just, okay, go over here, and this is where you're going to park, and here's you get the bins over there. Like, if you screamed at any of those people, I mean, you should just be ashamed of yourself.
Well, and it's things like that. I mean, we're talking, there's a referee shortage right now in high school football here in the state, and some of that's probably money, but some of it's also like you're getting yelled at left and right. Like, pretty soon people aren't going to volunteer to do anything, because why would you? Like, who wants to put up all that crap?
Yeah, it's weird how sports, sports is almost in this way, like, worse than, like, some of the youth sports stuff, and we've talked about this. We've probably had multiple rants about this. The screaming at refs, screaming at coaches, my kid, you know, just this inability to just sit back and shut your effing mouth if you're not actually helping at all.
Mark from Ashland City on the text line says, if you want to lose faith in humanity, join a neighborhood Facebook group. I refuse to do it. I will never join one.
Oh, those are bad.
Yeah, I can't do it.
I mean, I don't want to, like, I don't want any Facebook groups to be part of my life, but it does seem like there are some that are even more special than others.
It really does. This has been the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad. You can check it out every morning at 7:45 here on the program. Coming up next, we'll be joined by Corey Curtis from News 2. We'll get his thoughts on the Titans and their preseason finale against Arizona, and look ahead to who's going to make the roster, who is not going to make the roster this week. That's next. This is Robbie and Rexroad, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.